Hey folks, it is Sunday, the 9th of April 2017, and you're listening to episode 60 of AIH Superfans Podcast. I am one of your superfan pals. My name is Alan, and on Twitter you can find me at Slip with Five Eyes or Slip.
And I'm Chris on Twitter. I'm CMAC Live. Hope to see you there.
And that's it. It's just you and me.
Yeah, it's a big round table today.
Yeah, I think that we may get a few people dropping in over the course of the time that we're recording here, but guys have kind of tapped out, I think, to a certain extent. Hopefully not on the podcast, but maybe on the season, but I see that you've powered your way through.
Yeah, I can't really fault them, can I? Where things are standing right now, I don't know. But yeah, I'm always down. So you just go with it. So,
all right. So the Jets finished their season yesterday. So I guess we will start there and talk about that. A 7-game winning streak to finish the season off. And in the last 10 games going 8-2 to finish the season at 40-35-7 for a total of 87 points. I saw a Jets fan out there this morning arguing very aggressively that they finished over 500.
Well, you can obviously argue the fake 500, and what about the fact that were they 500 all season? You accomplished that right at the end when it didn't matter, even if you want to call it 500, which obviously is an argument in itself.
So this 7-game winning streak that the Jets finished the season on, which was the longest, I don't know if the entire franchise history back to Atlanta, but certainly in the last 6 years, which was nice, that winning streak ended up putting you only 7 points out of the playoffs.
So that's incredible.
So even with a massive run at the end of the year, you're still not even close to being in the top 16. But at the same time, I will say this. I mean, you could have just really packed it in and played like shit, but some of these hockey games were pretty good, and at least the fans that paid for tickets to go watch this team in garbage time got, you know, as for a one-night event, got something pretty exciting, right?
Yeah, for sure. The hockey's been decent, and it makes you wonder when you hear it all the time about we kept the game simple and all these things is, you know, what's going on at the other times, because it's more entertaining for sure, and it's obviously getting them results, whatever's changed, right? So you wonder, we all wonder, where was this the other, you know, 70 games, but take that a step further, really, where was it? What's the difference? I mean, they have the same guys missing from the lineup, you know, that they were complaining about 3 months ago. So I don't know. I think you have to question maybe why you're winning in this garbage time. I don't understand.
And, you know, forgive me if I'm a little salty about this. Like, I guess I should be happy about a 7-game winning streak, but it literally doesn't matter.
No.
Like, it means zero things. Once you're eliminated, it's like if I fail a grade in school, or if I'm told I'm going to lose my job because I'm incompetent, but that, you know, they give me 2 weeks notice, and right, then it doesn't matter if I pick up my performance. Like, it's over.
Right. And yeah, no, there's no doubt. And so you're wondering, well, what I've been wondering is this really a sign of a team that doesn't like pressure and doesn't, you know, perform when they're supposed to? And what is that telling us about maybe the core group of guys and where they learned that, or why they haven't been able to shake that? I don't know. It's concerning. Why would you all of a sudden, and I guess the other argument would be it's not all of a sudden you're playing as hard as you can play all 82 games, right? But why would you all of a sudden be in this position with the same issues going against your team? Like I said, the injuries, the quote unquote goaltending, all of those things are still there.
The other thing that's funny is that there's also talk like, well, now we've got some momentum going into next year. And it's like, next season starts 6 months from now. Like, yeah. You're not going to step on the ice in October and be like, let's carry forward from what we did back in April.
Hey, those four games last year carried us forward to winning a lottery. So, I mean, that's what we were told, essentially, is that, those wins, maybe that was the continuation. It makes no sense. You can't even, as we know in sports, momentum isn't even really a thing from game to game. How could it be a thing 6 months later when there's going to be five or six different play? It's ludicrous. Absolutely.
So when we look at the standings, now we're recording this on Sunday morning, so they're, most teams are still ready to play their final game tonight. The season ends this evening. But kind of speculating where things are going to land. So the Jets right now are 20th overall in the league with 87 points. The only teams that can catch them at this point, and actually, no, they can't, because the Jets have a win tiebreaker over Carolina. And Los Angeles can catch them, and then I don't know what the tiebreaker is there. I guess it's season series?
I would think so.
So I believe the Jets may have... No, they lost badly in LA the last time they were there. So I'm not sure where that lands either. So at this point...
They beat them in a shootout.
Yeah, the Jets can't do worse than 21st, and they may end up in 20th. So, you know, pretty weak lottery odds is what you're going to get as a reward.
Yes.
For the season.
Which going back on the 7-game win streak, from what I've been reading, the variance, whether they won all or lost all, was maybe two spots in the, you know, up and down in the standings. And what is that in percentages? 0.5%, 1.5%?
Well, if you say 7 games ago, they were at 73 points, right? Because they would have earned 14. So 73 points. And I mean, they're not going to lose 7 in a row, I don't think. But 73 points would have put them fifth last, or 26th place.
Okay, yeah.
Detroit's at 77, Buffalo's at 78. So if you imagine that they went 500, that the difference between 500 and where they're at is only about three spots. So I don't get as frustrated over garbage time wins when it comes to the standings, because I'm just more frustrated about the whole collective season.
Mm-hmm.
You can't blame the players. The players aren't going to go out and fuck around. And there's people who are pissed off that they played Thorburn so much. And my thought is, yeah, the right thing to do, I think, is to play the younger players. But if you're on Team Tank, then isn't Thorburn better for tanking?
Yeah, I mean, I think the tanking thing this year is a little different. That's, to me, like last year, the fact that anybody with such a strong draft and anybody was cheering wins at the end of last season when they could fall so far and all that kind of stuff, that was crazy to me. This year, it wasn't going to make a huge difference, and I think you're pretty much, from what we were told, those picks between 5 and 12, that sort of area, pretty much, you know, not a big difference in the guy. You're going to try and pick a guy that might surprise you anyway. So I don't think it's as big of a deal as it was last year. And as far as that Thorburn thing, I think he should have been out for a while and then put him in the last handful of games, you know, show him the respect that way. But we could talk about that for the whole hour, about the lineup decisions this last 5 or 6 weeks.
Or this last season.
Well, or the whole season for sure. Yeah, just absolutely.
So the season in terms of the team, and again, we'll talk to about individual players shortly, but in terms of the team, I mean, where do we rank this? Is it easy? First of all, is it easy to say that this season has been a failure?
Well,
is that harsh?
No. Well, I guess most experts would say we finished exactly where we thought they would. And that's it's a little bit of a mirage, right? Given the win streak at the end here. Most people had them just out of the playoffs, and that's kind of where they are. I mean, as you talked about at the beginning, it's not really where they are. They're well out of the playoffs, but that's what it's going to look like. I think it's a failure given what we see from them from time to time and the individuals on the roster. I think we've talked before. I think they're only one or two players away from being one of the best teams in the conference.
So let's look at the players here. I'm just pulling up the final stats. I know that we had, you know, four guys with 60 points, but where did we end up across the board? So lots of good individual seasons from players, which again, I think if you're frustrated, can add to the frustration. Mm-hmm. So Scheifele ended up being point a game, 82 points in 79 games, and he had 32 goals. I mean, certainly he kind of just carried forward from where he ended off last season and has established himself as the number one center on this team. And, I mean, 82 points in terms of point production, that's elite right now in the league. He was, what, seventh?
Yeah, sure.
In scoring? That's,
yeah, point a game in this hockey era is great.
And fantastic. And Blake Wheeler, after kind of a slow-ish start, not a terrible start, but by his standards, a little slow start, really picked it up in the second half of the season. He ended up with 74 points and 12th in league scoring. So the Jets were the only team with two players in the top 12 in NHL scoring this year.
Holy.
Wow. Patrick Laine, of course, 36 goals and a great rookie campaign, 64 points in 73 games. Then Nick Ehlers with also 64 points. He played all 82 games. So the Jets ended up with four players with 60 points or more, and I believe they're all in the top, I think, 32 in scoring in the league.
Yeah, that's huge impact from four guys. And if you take Brian Little over the whole season, which is where I'm sure you go next on that list, he's up there too. He's got to be close to that.
He had 21 goals, 47 points. He was a 0.8 point per game producer, so over 82 games, that gets him in the 65 point range. And and again, the Jets had five players that scored 20 goals this year. Also, Byfuglien, he ended up with 52 points on the season for a defenseman. Kind of right where, you know, like right in his, I'm just going to look at defensive stats across the league. But again, I believe at least for point production, that puts him in elite territory. That puts him sixth.
Sixth for defenseman.
Yeah.
Wow. See, and this is, you know, you rattle off seven players right there. And you're talking about, there's not many teams that have that, as you pointed out, and that's the scary part. How are you struggling with guys like that?
Well, and then you have Matthew Perreault, who is another guy who really was firing on all cylinders over the second half of the season. Obviously, this, you know, was hurt and out for a lot of games, and I'm sure was dealing with injuries, but finished the season with 45 points in 65 games. So again, that .69 point per game average puts you close to 60 points as well over a full season.
Yeah.
Jacob Trouba, of course, had, you could consider to be kind of a breakout year. I mean, we knew he was great before this, but he was over half a point a game. He played 25 minutes a game. Byfuglien, by the way, ended up just over 27 minutes a game.
Wow. I think that's a wrong word. Jacob Trouba was absolutely maybe their best player this year. He was unbelievable from, I guess, around Christmas probably until the end of the year. Just crazy how good he was.
So you have all that good stuff right there. That's eight players. And with the exception of maybe Perreault, and we can get into that shortly, You're going into next season with all eight of these guys if you want them, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So, and also within these eight guys, I mean, you have, you know, four of them are veterans, but four of them haven't played more than five seasons in the league. So there's a lot to build around there too. So I understand completely why there's optimism. There are, as you said earlier, the main pieces existed with this team. They're there.
Definitely they are. Definitely. And then if you go into that next group, I think you and I are in agreement that the rest of the pieces are there. They're just not put in the puzzle the right way. And that's where somebody pointed out to me, maybe it was Ryan actually, or pointed out that the constant struggle of this franchise has been the bottom six. And originally it was the talent. Now, to me, it's the usage. And so when are we going to get over that and use all of this talent that we've acquired and play a different style of hockey or different group of players?
So the usage was frustrating in the second half of the season for sure. And certainly they had better options than what they used in some areas. I would argue at the start of the season, we were talking very, we gave them praise for some of the decisions they made. I mean, they did put Pavlik in the minors. They put Strait in the minors. They put Peluso in the minors. And Thorburn and Stewart were seeing press box time pretty regularly for the first half of the year.
Yeah, they were. And Connor was playing at that time, correct?
Yes.
So that's where you had a little bit of that. And I guess, so are we saying that maybe that got changed because of the results that were there? I don't remember how they started this season. Were they strong at the start of the season with that lineup?
No,
or...
no, they weren't.
Right. So maybe we don't know what we're talking about. Maybe the three scoring lines and that isn't the way to go. If we're going to say that they tried it at the beginning of the year.
Well, we've had a lot of discussion out there about what did end up going wrong. I think the consensus that I hear is either coaching or goaltending or a little bit of both. What do you think?
Well, I'm a huge Hellebuck fan, as I make that quite obvious. I'm not a fan of the systems, if you want to call them that. I'm not a fan of the goalie coach. But I think it's ludicrous, absolutely, to think that just plugging in another goalie is going to make all the difference on this team. I think the systems don't provide any help for the goalie. I think the special teams are making a goaltender's stats worse than they are. And I think you've got a goalie that's been better than their previous one. I think the backup goaltending this year was a problem, and I think maybe in hindsight it might be fair to say that putting Pavlik down wasn't the right move. I think you could have put Pavlik on the bench with Hellebuck, and if you get a normal Pavlik season out of him as a backup, you have an all right season. The backup goalies were the ones really that cost the Jets. What's Hellebuck, 7 games over 500 or fake 500?
Yeah, his I think he was over real. Sorry, I'm jumping around on stats on NHL.com, and I don't want to lose the page I'm on, so I'm going to open up another one on the world's worst website. Here we go. Players, goaltenders. I know that his winning, like his record ended up being pretty solid.
Right. And so if Pavlik and Hutchinson or the combination or whatever have a similar win percentage as Hellebuck does, they're at the playoffs. And I don't think that that's a Hellebuck issue. And I think a lot of people are turning it into a Hellebuck issue. I think the real issue, like I said, was Hutchinson and Pavlik not being able to win a game.
So Hellebuck ended up at 26-19-4. So actually 3 games over real 500. He had a 907 save percentage. I think we're familiar with save percentages in that territory. But again, lots of patience for that kind of save percentage for, 5 years.
Right.
And now all of a sudden it's not good enough. And as you said, Hutchinson was, he actually picked up a few wins over the last part of
right
the year.
Right at the end, sure.
But still 9-12-3, 0.903 save percentage. Pavlik for his brief stint was 4-4 with a 0.888. And Eric Comrie had the one game where he picked up the win. Right. And, 0.897, but in one game. So let's not.
That seems to be everyone's favorite, is the one game save percentage calculators.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are free agent goaltenders on the market over the course of the offseason. I mean, they're going to have to make a heck of a decision here. You know, Pavlik, let's assume that he's not coming back. We can joke all we want, but I think that he's done. I think.
Yeah, he's done.
Hutchinson is under contract for one more season, but, you know, you can, it's $1 million. You can dump him in the minors if that's your choice. And if someone claims him from waivers, if he has to go through that process, then so be it. So it's, you've got Hellebuck, you've got Comrie. So you're thinking that, do you think that they should try to roll with that? Or do you think that they should look to sign a veteran to be a backup?
I firmly believe they need a veteran, but not a one, not a Fleury, not a Bishop. And also my biggest thing is a lot of people are on the Scott Darling train.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we didn't have Hellebuck and this was last year, I think that that's a great idea. But I think bringing in Scott Darling right now is the same thing as bringing in Connor Hellebuck last year. It's a unknown quantity because he's a backup on a great team. If you're going to, I'm not even saying as if it were me, as an organization, you can't look into a camera and say, we're going to bring in this unknown guy after you spent the whole year talking about the fact that your goaltending was unpredictable and developing. You can't do the same thing again. You've got to bring in somebody. And even if he blows it, you can say, well, we thought we knew what we had. But you can't take a chance again because you just took a chance 12 months ago by saying, or 8 months ago by saying, Hellebuck's the guy. So to me, you get a decent guy to play 40 games, or assume that it's 40 games, and whoever plays better gets the bulk of the work.
Oh, lo and behold, look who's joined us. We're getting a little too happy here. Arby.
Hello, hello.
Oh, and it's a little busy in the Arby household.
Yes. Yeah, the Sunday morning recording means there's going to be kids that are awake.
How are report cards?
They're done. They're like that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I feel like that CNN reporter with the kids walking in.
So, yeah, that's right. So, seeing as you're handing out grades, I know we just did mid-season grades not that long ago, but how do you want to grade this season, Ryan?
Is the poop emoji, does that count as a letter grade?
Would you put that on a report card that you're handing out to a student?
sometimes I think about doing that.
I think we were just actually not, just before you came on, I asked the question, is it too harsh to simply deem this season as a failure?
I don't think it's that harsh. I think it was a failure. They are, like, it looks like they are going to finish directly in the mushiest middle possible with 20th or 17th or something based on that win last night?
Right now, 20th is what it's looking like.
Okay, so they're not quite the best team to miss the playoffs, but they're right in that mushy middle again. And I do find it interesting that some of the people always go back and say, well, what did you expect from this season? But that was before they realized that this team had 460 goal scorers and, what, 3 or 4 in the top 30 of scoring, and they still didn't have a sniff. Like, I do think this season was basically a write-off based on the Jets' decisions, and what a waste.
We actually looked over the players and the top eight. Like, if you go through their top eight just point producers in terms of the season that they had, like Scheifele, Wheeler, Laine, Ehlers, Byfuglien, Little, Perreault, Trouba. All had, yep, individually, all had great years.
Yeah, they did.
And yet, here we are, you know, out of the playoffs 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, and really never really in it all year.
Right, and Morrissey stepped right in, and he was an unknown, and he was more than acceptable. And, they sat there, and they watched Hutchinson just be brutal, and they never addressed the goaltending. The only time they did was when they called up Pavlik and pumped his tires with his 888. And it's just such a waste. It's just another year of the veterans getting older. I know. I think it is extremely disappointing. And it's nice that the out-of-town markets or the out-of-town media have addressed it often over the past couple of weeks. Sportsnet and TSN both called the Jets the most disappointing team. And I agree. I just don't know how you can airdrop in a 35 goal 18-year-old and still not turn the needle.
And
I think it's interesting that Ryan, what you said, that they wrote it off before it even started.
Yeah,
and that's incredible in professional sports.
Yeah, like
they as much said so, right? They said that.
Well, yeah, like because when things started going bad, that was the sort of the prevailing message sent out about halfway through the year once things fell apart. But the season started pretty well for them, and it ended hilariously well for them with this useless 7-game winning streak. But in the middle, yeah, it was bad. But yeah, like I didn't expect this team to make the playoffs, but that's the entire point. That's why I was so mad going into the season, because they seemed to make decisions that hamstrung them from day one. And it was proven to be right. Like, I had no problem going with Hellebuyck, but it was apparent in November that Hutchinson was not going to be able to spell any relief for this team, yet they just sat on their hands.
Like, I think what's frustrating for me is that, and surprisingly enough, maybe to some people out there who follow me on Twitter, I don't think that this team is a disaster, and I don't think this team is that far away from it. But that's what makes it even more frustrating, is that I think that you've drafted well, and I think that you still have the right veteran group on the team, but there are pieces missing to this puzzle, and there's one person's job to try to find those pieces, and they did nothing this year.
Yeah, like the only move they made was when they traded Stafford for a pick. No waiver claims, no trades other than selling off Drusless, who is actually looking pretty good in Boston, hilariously.
they let Bermie walk.
Right. They called up a bunch of kids, which was fine. But they just sat there. Like, I would love to collect $1 million to sit on my hands like Chevy does every year. Like, what does he do, honestly?
They knew Myers was out for the season on, what, November 30th? And they didn't about getting another defenseman or three that they needed.
Yeah, like Brian Strait was the only thing they did. And he was the Trouba replacement, if I remember correctly, from a TSN radio personality.
Amazing.
That's what drives me crazy, is that, you know, this whole season was written off before it even started. And they still charged NHL ticket prices for another developmental season. And we watched more good players, more veterans, get another year older. We watched the decline of Toby Enstrom this year. I love Toby, but he is not who he used to be. And it's not that much of a leap to think that Bufflin and Wheeler and Little and Perreault, with all of their injury histories, that they're going to start to decline.
And it's not like this team has nothing available to trade in a deal. Again, a few years ago, if you said, well, what are we going to give up? Okay, you could make that argument. You could have given up veterans, but whatever. But today you've got prospects, and you're deep at forward. So deep that guys who are playable, though some of this is also coach's decision, are sitting in the press box or on the moose, right? Like, there are assets on this team that other teams covet. It took, outside of that, like, it took the 30th pick in the draft last year to get Anderson out of Anaheim for Toronto. And, right. And look what that's done for that team. Like, I had a guy arguing with me a few weeks ago where he was like, well, the Jets are more talented. The Leafs just have goaltending. And I was like, is goaltending not talent?
Yeah.
Like, you can't just say, let's eliminate a really important thing and then say all things are created equal here. So,
well, according to Matthew Perreault today, apparently this team needs more saves, as he once again threw Hellebuyck under the bus.
I saw that.
Go down here.
What's that?
Sorry. And what did St. Louis pay for Brian Elliott? Like a second-round pick?
Second-round pick.
Like, the options have always been there, unless Chevy doesn't even have the other GM's phone numbers, which is probably a non-zero chance of that.
And the Elliott one too, like that cost him a second round pick, but it ultimately, you know, I think he was he on the last year of a contract?
Yeah.
So
yeah, he's a pending US, but they got him, but he's established himself there. Like after a struggle, he's the big reason why they're in the playoffs.
Well, and I was actually going to argue that could have been even the better move, right? Like Anderson, you had to take the risk with the 5-year contract, but Elliott was cheaper because it's like, well, let's see what happens for a year here.
Yeah, and what was it, 2-3 months ago, Calgary and Winnipeg were tied in the standings, and then one went into a tailspin, and then the other rocketed into the playoffs. Like, there was a lot of comparisons between these two teams, and, well, there's going to be a sea of red and no whiteout.
No.
Is it just as simple to think, though, that if you put Anderson in Arnett and Bishop or the Calgary guy, always forget his name. If you just put him in here, then all of a sudden we're in the playoffs, because that's what I've seen on Twitter all morning. If we just had a goalie, like that's the only thing we need.
I don't know. I mean, what's Hellebuck's season finish at? He was, what, 906 going into last night?
He was 907.
So 907 to finish. So that's below average, but it's the best of the four that played. I think Hellebuck's still the answer going forward, but he needed relief. Like, there was no option to play anyone else behind him other than all the wins that Pavlik got when he was letting in four. Like, how many times did this team score 4 or 5 goals and not get any points?
Oh, that's kind of cute. I have to pull it up, but...
Times. I remember tweeting, it's like, how to score 4 goals and not get any points, the Winnipeg Jets story. So, would a save or two have helped? I think so.
Right, but what I'm saying is anybody other than Carey Price providing that with this team? I'm not sure. As much as we've been on Pavlik's case for 6 years or 5 years, maybe there is more to it, that maybe it was... what's going on around him.
And maybe based on where you finished the season, you could maybe make that argument, but let's step back into reality here. Again, it took you a 7-game winning streak, so that's 14 points at the end of the season, to put you in a position to be 7 points out of a playoff spot.
Yeah, like they're not even close still after this run.
So where, you know, this run really kind of inflates what the season looks like overall, but if you go back to let's just go back 10 games from now, the length in which the Jets were out of it and had been throughout the whole season, that whole thing is not made up with just goaltending.
No, that's kind of my point, is unless you're, and even if you are, even if you're a 920 save percentage, what is that doing in the standings? I've been arguing all year, and I'll stand by this, that you change a power play and penalty kill makes a much bigger difference in the standings than a, you know, 12 points or 8 points on your goal, on your save percentage.
Jets, by the way, were 18th in power play this year, 18.2. And again, think about all the firepower that they have, and that's probably a little bit underwhelming. Penalty killing, bad, 77.5%, and 25th in the league. And like, right there, sniffing at their heels, are Buffalo and Arizona.
Look, who are the bottom five in penalty killing, and where are they in the standings?
Well, Dallas, Colorado, Vancouver, Arizona, Buffalo, Winnipeg Jets.
Look at that.
Common theme there.
And also in relation to that, how's the goaltending when teams have that kind of special team? I know they keep stats for 5-on-5, save percentage and all that stuff, but if you bump that up, what does your save percentage go up?
Yeah, that's true.
It's chicken and egg. I understand that it's chicken and egg, but don't just say that it's, I'm not, you know what I mean? When people just say that it's one way, how about maybe it's the other way? And when, maybe those numbers go up if they're better the other way.
Goaltending, does it really matter as long as Wade Flaherty's here?
And that's further to the point.
Like, I remember seeing a tweet, it's like, yeah, we need a goalie who can self-coach and ignore the noise.
Go ahead.
No, I just don't understand. I've been banging my head against this wall about the whole goaltending thing. You signed a guy for $20 million for 5 years, and he basically on potential when they signed Pavlik. He never lived up to it. Every backup goalie has been relatively good here, and the two goalies that were really good in the minors come up and regress. How are you? Why would you not take a chance of changing the coach? It's not a big gamble. It's not a big gamble to just say, sorry, we're going to bring up Rick St. Croix. You're done, Flaherty. That's nothing. That's nothing for a pro sports franchise to do, is get rid of a goalie coach.
Well, I think Flaherty has a moose tattoo somewhere that what are all those marks from the Harry Potter movie with all those bad guys? They have all the same tattoo. Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure that all the True North veterans and alumni have that same tattoo somewhere.
Well, there you go.
It just honestly, is there anything that could be even if it's just for shits and giggles, to say let's try a new goalie coach because it hasn't been working. Ha ha, let's try it. It can't be that. It's got to be our poor evaluation of goalies.
Well, when you're looking at the ingredients for this team, the only thing that you've done outside of the players is when you replaced Noel with Maurice. But other than that, that formula has been in place now for 6 years, and it's not a winning formula. You keep kind of monkeying with the players. You don't really. Like, you've moved along with these players in about as slow a pace as possible. But fortunately, I think the direction is still the right one with players, but the personnel that run this team, we're just cool with it. Like, at this point, Maurice is getting extended, right? Like, I don't think that there's any doubt here.
Yeah, I think right. So too. It's
so if you're the general manager, you either have to admit that the players you've acquired aren't good enough, or the coach you have isn't good enough. And you're not willing to do either of those things because you're not trading anybody and you're not firing anybody. But yet these results are good enough for you. So where is the... I just don't understand. If you're running a business, is that how you run your business?
Well, and I mean, Chevy is surviving. I mean, who knows how he's surviving with True North? I think they're just loyal to a fault. But he's surviving with the media and the fans because, and I'm noticing this again, with salty Jets fans who are so upset over the Maple Leafs getting to the playoffs. But have you ever seen a fan base fucking cash in potential future results for bragging rights now? Because these, like, you can't just say, well, we're going to be good, so
that for 3 years.
Yeah, but fans really believe that, and they keep believing that over and over again, and that's why Chevy doesn't get roasted at all, because everybody is convinced that someday, and they're probably not wrong, at some point in time in the future, the team will be good, but it's like, now has to count. It really does, and now hasn't been good, and it wasn't good last year either. It's got to mean something, and we're just, I don't know, I think that we keep getting fooled into this, well, wait, you just wait and see, and that's what's saving everybody on this team.
Yeah, like, there's always next year with this team, but there really isn't always next year. Like, Buffalo's in this tailspin of draft and develop. The Oilers were terrible with all those first-round picks forever until they got McDavid. There's no guarantee that these teams will get better. And, this team is, for 6 years now, has been not very good. And these past 2 years, even with all of these draft picks, they're still somehow less than the sum of their parts. And that's on coaching and that's on management. Like, someone needs to figure out how to use these pieces, and they can't.
There's a lot of teams that do a lot more with less talent, and that's, I think, my biggest issue when talking about this stuff is, you have all these guys, how is it not happening? That's just in a nutshell what I know that's what we've been talking about, but I just, how do other teams do it? What, there's got to be a reason why there are people that are called better coaches than others, right? There's got to be a reason why there's elite coaches and elite, the media in this town would have you believe that that's not a real thing, but why is Babcock and Vigneault and these guys considered the best coaches? Because there's a difference in them, and the ones we have don't make a big enough difference, I don't think. They're not maximizing the talent.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing with how we argue other things in terms of what Jets fans tend to believe, is that we live in this bubble. We live in this incredible bubble where, and you're going to know more about your team than other teams because that's who you follow the most closely, but you start to get this belief because you watch your team and you're like, well, shit, like Scheifele's turned into a pretty good player and Liney's a fantastic rookie and Wheeler's a great player and we love Buff. And it's like that those things are all true. But what they don't recognize is that those things are happening with other teams. It's the same thing with, well, look at how well we draft. And Ryan, what's your favorite thing to say?
Every team drafts and develops.
Like you're not, you may do it well, but that doesn't make you a special team. And you're right. In one area, you've got Paul Maurice as the coach. He's not a special coach. He might be.
He never has been.
Yeah, he's just a guy. And yeah, he's an NHL coach, so he's better than I am. Like, I get it. But there are 30 coaches in the league and soon to be 31 coaches in the league. And if you look at who the special coaches are that make a real difference in terms of making their team a winner, Paul Maurice isn't that guy and never has been.
No.
I used to be totally baffled by how good the Dallas Stars were. I could never figure that out this 10, 15, 12 years ago. And a lot of people, Dave Tippett. And I was like, really? The coach makes that much of a difference? He goes to Phoenix and with garbage takes them to the playoffs, takes them to the Western Conference final. Like, I know Dave Tippett's not the best coach in the NHL, but he manages with nothing to get stuff out of his teams. And now you've got this. I don't know. I just don't get it.
Well, it comes down to something like this too, is the Ladd trade, for example. You know, they made a good trade. They got decent return for a pending UFA. But look what that trade has now turned into. Marco Dano's press boxed, and they turned that first round pick into a Coke machine. And like, I don't care how good the return is. If your coach isn't going to play your kid, and then you draft a highly questionable pick with it, like, there's a disconnect here between the coach and the GM and everything. Like,
we had a little get together last night, and we were talking about that. Who made these decisions to call these guys up? Why isn't Dano and Patan why aren't Dano and Patan playing for the Moose if they're not going to be playing? There's got to be something going on there for this to be playing out like this, because it makes no sense for those guys to be up here. There's got to be some sort of issue between Sheveldayoff wants the guys up and Maurice doesn't want them up yet or something. There has to be.
Yeah, like, and if they don't say that Dano was hurt, because we knew he had an issue with, an ankle or something, but they're so secretive and they're so quiet that we need to try and piece things together. But Brandon Tanev on the third line last night with Dano up in the press box, it boggles the mind. And if that's your return for Ladd, now I'm not saying we needed to, sign Ladd to that 7-year extension, because that's not a good contract. But you literally got nothing for him as of right now. You got a guy that your coach doesn't trust, and a first round pick that all accounts are questionable at best.
So I have a question for both you guys. If we assume, let's just assume that nothing changes, everything carries into next year, which isn't that much of a stretch to do this team. But let's imagine, so our top two lines next year again are, Scheifele, Ehlers, Liney, Little, Perreault. Who am I missing?
Unless he's claimed in the expansion. Right?
Yeah, Perreault and I'm missing some Ehlers. Did I say Ehlers?
Yeah, we know the top
Shifley, six, right? Wheeler, Liney, Ehlers, Little Perreault. Let's say that's your top six. So given the existing guys who are with this team and in this organization right now, who should be the next six guys? Who do we think should be the next six?
I think it should be Patan, Connor, and Dano, or Armia, some sort of mix of those four guys. And the fourth line should be Lowry, Kopp, and a mix of Matthias or who's ever the leftover guy from the third line. And that's minutes wise when I say third and fourth, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. What I think and what the Jets think are clearly different. Because they love Adam Lowry, and they're going to plug him into that third line role, even though he's a fourth liner. The third line was mostly in the press box the other night. Right? Like, they sat... Who'd they sit when in Columbus? It was Patan, Dano, and Connor that sat. All three mm-hmm. of them sat. Like, that's your third line.
Yeah.
You didn't even play them together to see what they could do.
Go ahead.
Fourth line should be Lowry with, Kopp, and I don't know, if you need a fighter or some sort of sandpaper, like J.C. LePon or something. Like, except when they re-sign Thorburn, of course.
Well, that Armia, Kopp, or sorry, Armia, Lowry, Matthias line was a great, well, not a great, well, I mean, they were a really good fourth line, weren't they?
They'd be a good fourth line, but when Bayak says they're the best third line in the league, you just can't help but like bang your head into the wall. Like, they're so below average. Like, Kessel's on a third line in Pittsburgh, and you're going to say that these jokers are the best third line in the league? Like, come on.
The thing about it is, I think I've mentioned it on here before, what, in my estimation, wins the Stanley Cup is your third line. The top two lines offset on most teams, and I don't mean they cancel each other out, they just offset one game they score, you know what I mean? And then your fourth line should conceivably do the same if they're strong. And that third line is where you make your money. And like you said, Phil Kessel's the perfect example. That team took off when they separated him, right? And put him down there. If you've got a guy in your third line that can score 30 goals, who can stop you?
Well, and like, I liked what they did with in Columbus, actually, that one day. Because didn't they drop Ehlers down to the third line for that game at some point?
That's, you know,
They moved up Kopp instead of Roslovic, which was dumb. But I do think you don't have to load up your top six at the expense of your bottom six. Like we've seen in Pittsburgh, they have Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel on three different lines. Like, I'm not saying we have a guy like Crosby who can turn Connor Sheary and Jake Guentzel into quality hockey players, but good teams have three scoring lines. And Maurice and this team are trying to pigeonhole in a third line shutdown line and a fourth line that doesn't play. Like
Shifley and Wheeler managed to turn Kopp into a goal scorer. So yeah, most teams go with the two man lines, right? So you would have your Shifley and Wheeler, we'll say Little and Line A, and for argument's sake, Patan and Ehlers. And sure. Then you can plug and play the rest. Armia can go wherever. Dano can go wherever. And then you keep that fourth line basically as is, right? There's nothing wrong with that. And then the ice time is what evens out the scoring. It's not putting all your eggs in the basket. It's the fact that you can do that, but if they're not playing more than 4 minutes or 6 minutes, they're not going to get the points they need to get. But if they're all playing similar minutes, all of a sudden you're going to see what those guys can do with some time. Those guys, Patan and Dano, if you take out power play points, had almost the same amount of points as Lowry and Matthias had this year. And they played like way less time per game and over the course of the season.
Yeah, I found that interesting. I was hearing a lot of props given to Lowry for his season. Yeah, and he had an okay season. But they were talking about all of his offensive output. It's like, well, you had guys banking shots off your legs on the power play.
As in any situation, what does a replacement person get given that opportunity? That's great. Adam Lowry scored that many goals. How many goals would Laine have if he's playing the same amount of power play minutes? How many goals would Patan have or Dano have if they're playing in the same position with the same amount of ice time? So you, if you put somebody with more talent doing the same job, they're always going to come out ahead. And replacement guys are replacement guys. If you're given that opportunity, somebody's going to score. Like I said, look at Andrew Kopp playing on the top line. He's going to score.
Well, like how many points?
Like you said, Connor Sheary scoring with Crosby. Who?
Yeah, exactly. Well, how many points, how many goals did that third line of Lowry, Matthias, and Armia score at 5-on-5? If you take away Lowry's power play goals and Armia's shorties, which I guess you shouldn't really take away the shorties, but if you take those away at 5-on-5, they didn't produce.
Well, Lowry had, I'll tell you, Lowry had 10 even strength goals. Yeah. Who were the other ones?
Matthias
had eight goals.
Yeah.
And Armia had 10 goals. So 28.
Four shorthanded.
So your third line had less than 30 goals at 5-on-5. Like you can't win that way.
And you're telling me a line of Patan, Dano, Connor, Armia, that line doesn't score more given that same opportunity? Doesn't score more goals than that? Of course they do.
And by the way, also, and this one more point that I wanted to get your guys' opinion on, you got Matthew Perreault, who has, just in terms of points per game, is now double of what Lowry was, 0.69 versus 0.35. And yet we're talking about Perreault being maybe the guy that gets exposed?
Yeah.
I mean, I get that he's older and he's injury prone and he has a more expensive contract, which all have to mean something, but the difference in the player, this is vast, this difference, right?
Yes, it's huge. It's a huge difference.
It's a top six, actually, well, underlying numbers suggest that he's a top line producer versus a bottom six role player.
Who has the bigger trade value? That's how I look at it. What's your biggest asset? And then you can talk about going 7-3. And another way I like to think about it is, would a general manager ever trade Tyler Myers for Adam Lowry? Never. Would a general manager ever trade for Matthew Perreault Tyler Myers? That seems like a pretty decent trade. So that's another way to evaluate who you're protecting and if you're going 7-3 or 4-4.
Would anybody trade for Tyler Myers now?
I'm saying a healthy Tyler Myers.
Okay. Well,
yeah.
I mean, I see them actually exposing him just because who in their right mind would claim him with his wonky everything?
I agree 100%. But they value Myers the same as they value Lowry. For some reason, he's more valuable than he really is.
Because he's tall.
No, it's important to be tall.
You can't teach size.
Everyone, are you guys excited for playoffs? Five teams from Canada are in.
I want Toronto to do well just so I can just crush the draft and develop model here.
People, just so many friggin', like, I'm not a Leafs fan, but I love pointing out what Leafs are doing, and obviously I hear about it all the time because I live here now, but it's amazing what they've done, and it's also amazing how there's still just these denials of reality that come from the fan base over it. It's like, oh, well, yeah, but the Jets had the same amount of wins, and it's like, well, you can spin this either way. The Leafs lost fewer regulation games before you get to the circus that's 3-on-3 and shootouts. Like, that is also a meaningful thing.
I can't. Somebody said that to me today. Well, they both had the same amount of wins. Well, they're in a harder conference and they're in the playoffs, so something else is different.
They're also in a conference. Like, has anyone ever pointed out that the Jets play in a conference with 14 teams?
I was just going to say that. Like, there are 16 versus 14, and the Jets can't be better than seven teams. I honestly think that Vegas is going to come in and that's going to hurt the Jets because it's going to be one more team. And I think Vegas could be okay based on these rules. But yeah, like Toronto is the eighth best team out of 16. That's meaningful. The Jets are ninth out of 14. they're much closer to the bottom.
Well, and somebody else pointed out this morning that the Leafs got Anderson, so that's why they're in the playoffs. No mention of Mike Babcock in that, right? Because that probably, yeah, having the best coach in the NHL probably has nothing to do with their improvement.
And by the way, Anderson didn't just appear out of the blue. The Leafs got Anderson because their GM did a thing to make their team better. that's why he came there. Like, it's like what do you think? Like, so, okay, if you say that the Leafs got Anderson and that's the only reason, then you're basically saying again that our GM is ineffective, right? Can't have it both ways.
There's always got to be an answer for what you're questioning, but the Sunshine Crew never think about what the reason is. They just point out that this is the way it is. And again, if we're in the playoffs, there doesn't have to be a problem. We're not in the playoffs. We're not doing well. Somewhere there's a source or a root cause of whatever the problem is. You're right. You're bang on. So pick your one. Is it the coach? Is it the players? Is it the general manager? Because it has to be one of them, because it's not perfect. So something's got to be wrong.
And the Leafs organization addressed all three of those things 2 years ago. They addressed the GM, the GM, and then the coach, and then last season they addressed the GM. And you can sit there and go, well, yeah, but they also got Austin Matthews. We got Patrick Laine.
Yeah.
So, you know, Austin Matthews is the better player right now, and he's going to win the Calder Trophy, but Patrick Laine is a damn good player. And you can also argue, well, yeah, well, they also had high draft picks for Marner and Nylander. And it's like, you have Ehlers and Shifley, dudes. And it's not like we're drafting terrible spots. And apparently we're a great drafting team. So,
and who would you rather, James Van Riemsdyk or Blake Wheeler? Like, our veterans are way better than their veterans on top of it. They don't have a Brian Little. Would you rather Tyler Bozak or Brian Little?
Yeah, exactly.
And so instead of shit talking and looking at like being in denial of what's happened in Toronto, why don't you use that as your argument for what kind of changes can be made? Like, they've built a model here and it's not a secret. You can see exactly what they've done. And it's things that I think that this group at least has discussed for years. Tank properly, sell off veterans, fill in your holes with, you know, decent serviceable players in free agency who you can then sell off when you're tanking, get a new frickin' GM, and address your weaknesses with more aggressive moves.
Yep.
That's, and remember, like I always say, draft and develop is more than what people here think. Trading is an important part of drafting and developing. And that's been completely and utterly ignored. You have nothing if you're not moving assets. We talked about this on that show. Your Wayne Gretzky card isn't worth $600. It's worth nothing unless you sell it, right?
Oh, I like that.
All right.
Hey, what? Do you remember that time? You remember earlier this year when Maurice took a shot at Babcock? Whoops. just one last thing on the Leafs. I think the Marlies also made the playoffs. How are the Moose doing?
Like, which is funny.
That's also exactly part of development. The Moose were out of it in December. Hasn't been hockey played in the MTS Center in 2 years. Like, in two leagues.
the problem with the Moose is...
Where's the development?
It's the whole problem. The problem with the Moose is half of their players were sitting in press boxes and playing on fourth lines for the Jets.
Yeah.
If they wanted this team to look like that, they should have a bunch of $1 million Kyle Wellwoods playing on their third and fourth line and have all those guys down in the AHL winning 60 games and destroying everybody down there. But they didn't do that. They tried to run before they even could walk. Mm-hmm. There should be five guys that are playing for the Jets that should be down for the Moose right now. And we should be finishing 7 points out of the playoffs with a bunch of fourth liners.
Yep.
Not a bunch of kids. And that's going to cost them.
Before I go to ask the superfans, anyone upset that the NHL is not going to the Olympics?
I like them in the Olympics myself.
Yeah, I don't really care. I'm probably not going to watch anyways. It's in the middle of the night.
I think it's more exciting when they're there. I mean, if they if you put, because it's not just Canada, right? All countries are in the same boat without these players. So, of course, the Russians probably have the advantage because they've got all those guys in the KHL, but it'll still be interesting. Like, I'm still interested in the hockey tournament, and I don't know, it's a little bit easier for me to root for guys that aren't professional hockey players if they make a run. They may not. They may get crushed.
Yeah.
There might be a lot of AHL, might be AHL guys there too.
Yeah, I'm not, I don't. Yeah, it's a better tournament when the NHL's there, but I don't know. I can't get worked up about that.
All right, ask the super fans. We've got a few quick ones. Let's see here. Scott, Ban Ninja says, would Vegas looking for franchise face take Buff for number one pick, top expansion D-man, or two and no Jets pick? So basically, would they make a big trade for Buff if they wanted a guy for their franchise face? I don't think so. I think that they can I think that at least in the first season or two, they can just survive by existing.
Yeah, well, if there's any proof of the first year not really mattering, look at Winnipeg.
We've survived by existing for 6 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there? I've been thinking about this too. Again, I may as well go back to bitching about the Jets for a sec. Has there ever been a franchise that has celebrated more milestones that involve them just being there than the Jets? Like, we had an opening game, we made the playoffs, we had an outdoor game. Didn't win any of those things, but we celebrate that they happened.
The 1 year anniversary of the time we did this. Well, what's that? you haven't won anything. Let's celebrate that.
Okay, let's see here. This is, again, Scott. Okay to barf when Pomo and media play up Lowry 15 goals versus 11 in year one as huge development. He's on first power play unit now, ! Hashtag free Patan.
Yeah, well, we pretty much already addressed that, but yeah. I mean, most of what Maurice says now is barf-worthy because he doesn't mean what he says.
Ian Dimitru, fire one, but keep the rest. Maurice, Flaherty, or Huddy?
Oof. Fire Flaherty.
Yeah, if it's one, yeah.
It's the easiest one.
Yeah, and like I said earlier in the show, this doesn't do anything. This doesn't do anything, I mean, negatively. It could only be positive or the same. It can't hurt you to do that.
Mikey McMike. Mikey McMikeface, Mike at _Young. Are you taking a break for the off season? Dude, if the next time I come to Winnipeg, you greet me at the airport, I'll record every day.
Oh boy.
What?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I think we should probably record just because there's this summer more than others with the expansion draft. There should be lots of Jets content, but
Our best show ever was the live draft lottery reaction.
That's right.
You know, when we, this year, how are we all going to react when they're like, yeah, Jets are picking 11th? Woo!
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, you know what? If those top three defensemen are gone and the Jets reach a little bit for Nicholas Hague, I actually won't bitch about it. I promise.
Yep.
That sounds like the guy.
All right, boys. Sorry to do this, but I got to run. So have a good rest of the show.
Thanks, see man. Talk to you later, Arby.
Talk to you.
We only got a few left here. A couple from HB Sauce at Dr_Pleasures. What are your best guesses on who is going to Sin City?
Wow. We've been talking about it so much. Who's going to end up going? I'm not sure. I always have my thought and then what I think they're going to do. I can't help but think that they take a shot and leave Myers exposed. And protect the forwards. That means that we would lose Matthias or Kopp, I think.
Okay. I'm with you. Like, at this, unless they know more about what's happening with Myers than I do, right? So if they truly think the dude's going to be back next year and they really don't want to lose him, and they shouldn't, then if they think he's going to be good, they... Ugh. So hard saying that if the guy's missed a whole year. But if it's 4-4... I truly still think that they're going to protect Perreault. And I don't think it's a guarantee that Lowry goes.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing that nobody talks about. just because they protect Perot doesn't mean that Vegas wants Lowry.
No. So, I mean, it could be, what if Vegas wants Dano? Everyone seems to love Dano. He can stay healthy.
Yeah, exactly. He's a first-round pick. He's a top six forward, potentially. I don't know.
Too bad Arby left because Dr. Pleasures. Lastly, will Arby ever own season tickets again? I didn't see him in that discussion yesterday. I know that someone out there talked about how they weren't going to renew their season tickets, and so many people were offended.
It's unbelievable. Like, what if you just couldn't afford it anymore? Like, people sure, like, have a lot to say about people's business when it comes to something like that. I just, I couldn't get over that. Like, why would you just continue to be okay with spending $100 a pop? Well, where that person's seats are, they're more than $100 a pop. And be okay with it and then get criticized about not wanting to do that. Where else in the world do you just give money away?
I know. And, you know, if I was a season ticket holder for the Jets, and I tried, I didn't make the cut when the drive happened. So
they knew.
Yeah. But now looking at it, if I had season tickets and I renewed a couple of times and I'm looking at things now, it's like, well, my season tickets get me first dibs on playoffs if it ever happens again, which has happened for 2 games in 6 years. And, you know, it got me the home opener. But other than that, what game is that hard to get to if you want to see it?
Well, I was talking with somebody last night about season tickets, because he's got openings, and I'm like, the only reason I would even contemplate it is for playoff access.
Yeah,
because I mean, we know they're going to the playoffs soon. I mean, they have to. So, but is that a good enough reason to spend thousands of dollars a year? It shouldn't be like that. You should be wanting to go to the games.
And you know, if I really have time and energy and the desire to go to 41 games plus preseason, then absolutely, like, do it. But for a lot of people, you have to spend your time managing that for what ultimately becomes, especially if you're splitting it with friends, what ultimately becomes what, like 15 games? Well, just, why don't you just go to the 15 games you want to go to?
Yeah, now that you can get the tickets, I don't really see a huge thing. And maybe that's some of the issue that people are having with it, is because then it brings back bad memories, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that's although people have a problem expressing those things, because maybe it's not what they're thinking. Maybe they're just thinking, oh, you're just a dumb fan. But the underlying concern, of course, is if everybody starts saying, I'm not doing it anymore, we lose the team potentially. When in fact it's the opposite. When you don't have a 7,000 person waiting list, that's maybe when your general manager decides it's time to do something, or your owner says it's time to get a general manager that does something, and we better start winning, because having a team isn't good enough. The hardest ticket in pro sports are the Los Angeles Lakers, not when they're losing.
No.
And what does that tell you? Because if you're not giving me a reason to spend like $7,000 a game to sit courtside, I'm not going. So they fix it.
More questions from Dr. Pleasures. These two, well, the way I'm going to answer the first one makes me want to answer both of these, or ask both of these at the same time. First one is, who is most likely to be traded in the offseason? And the second is, what are your thoughts on Trouba? Does he sign an extension, or is he looking for the first bus out of Dodge? My answer is, I don't think there's any guarantees, and I don't know if I'd call it very likely that he gets traded in the offseason, but I would say right now he's the most likely.
I would say on any other team he would be most likely, and it would be a smart move, right?
Trade him
now when his contract's good, and replace him with who you trade him for. But not this general manager won't do that. He won't do anything until he's got an arm bar put on him.
And the resolution that I want, and what I'd ultimately like to see, is they negotiate a long-term contract and they do it this summer, right? Like, that's the best case scenario.
It has to. And if you don't, you have to trade him.
Yeah.
You can't let it go into next year.
So I'm not saying I want him to get traded. The question was, who is most likely to get traded? And based on the scenario that we're sitting at, Trouba is the most likely to get traded. Maybe, you know, maybe true, but becomes the face of the Las Vegas franchise. It went, you know, going back to the Buff question, Vegas is going to have a high draft pick. They're going to have a few good draft picks, and they're going to have, they're going to have some pretty good defensemen to swap back after the expansion draft. Not Trouba level.
No, but do you, we can't afford a Trouba level probably, right? I mean, cap wise.
No.
So with Ehlers and with Ehlers coming up, and yeah, I mean, it's not crazy to think. And you have to, even if he wants to, quote unquote, wants to stay, you have to consider it. He's probably your most valuable asset, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Him or Scheifele? You got to consider it. Again, I think if this were a different team, I don't think there'd be a question about it. But you have to wonder if you're going to wait until maybe it's too late and not take advantage and strike when you can. Who can you get off the Anaheim roster through Vegas with a Trouba in play?
There's a lot of ways that you could go about doing this. This Vegas thing creates a lot of possibilities for people to be creative. It'll be interesting to see who ends up making the most creative moves with how things kind of shake out with the start of this team. And if my GM wasn't Kevin Cheveldayoff, I'd be really interested in what's happening here too, but.
And that's unfortunately, right? And with seven guys in the minors and sitting in the press box, that could really help bolster some stuff too if you wanted to trade them. And as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, Brian Little. Not that I want that. It's just out there.
We should mention next season's, you know, assuming we'll see what extensions happen this summer. You got Little, you got Trouba, you've got there's one. Oh, Ehlers. A lot of work to be done.
I don't see Brian Little getting what he deserves and us keeping all those players. So something's got to give.
Yeah, and then the next year you got Liney. You got Morrissey. Oh, boy. It's not, you know, this isn't unique. This happens on every team. But, yeah, there's choices to be made here, and something's not going to fit.
Yeah, so when do proactive things start happening rather than waiting till the last minute? And you have to have a organizational depth chart and a foreseeable salary cap structure in two and three years. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And how are you going to deal with that if you're not trading a Trouba and a Little or an Ehlers? I've said, unfortunately, I don't guarantee it. I think he's going to be the guy that, it's going to be the odd man out. I don't want it to happen. He's probably my favorite player, but because they're going to pick Brian Little over a guy like Ehlers.
I think we're going to end it there on that hot take. Let people chew on that. That's all the questions for this week. Again, hashtag Ask the Superfans is how you get in touch with us. And you can touch base with us at AIH Superfans on the old twitter.com, and we're an hour and 15 minutes in, so I guess we will wrap up. And we made it largely with the two of us, thanks to Arby with the assist too.
Yeah, that was good. We needed that.
Yeah. Go to arcticicehockey.com for all your Winnipeg Jets news and notes. I think that we've been a little infrequent anyway since the Jets have been out of it, but we will continue to record over the course of the next few months, so keep an eye out for that. And if you're interested in coming on the show and dealing with us, maybe adding some brains to the show, you and I bring the sexy, right? But
that's it.
Yeah. If you want to come on, then by all means, touch base with any of us, and we'll do what we can to get you on, because our regular hosts are on rotation already, and we need folks in. And at this point, Chris, you're pretty much a regular. I mean, let's be honest.
Oh, I'm ecstatic about that.
Get to carry that stink with you wherever you go.
You're the guy, right? You're the guy. Yeah.
So anyways, until next time, I am one of your super fan pals. My name is Alan at Slip with 5 Oz on Twitter, or Slip.
And I'm Chris, CMAC Live. Come see me on the Twitter.
And follow RB. Ryan, of course, is RB _18 and eat at Arby's. And we will see you all in the near future. Go Jets, go golf.
Eat at Arby's.